have spoken the last two shiurim about the temperature of heat that you need in order to violate Bishul B'Shabbos. We spoke about the source of heat that you need in order to violate Bishul B'Shabbos. And something that is very important to talk about is now the next follow-up issue, which really follows in line with everything we spoke about until now. We mentioned that the Gemara does say that Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. There's an assumption that once something has been cooked, it is not able to be subject to cooking again. So long as Shabbos comes in and I already cooked this item before, what does it mean that I cooked it? Either it means I cooked it half of its potential cooking or one-third of its potential cooking, what we refer to as Kemaychel Ben Drusai, the robber, the ganav who's on the run, who cooks things very minimally and then eats them. That would be sufficient to call it already cooked, and therefore if you did anything later with it on Shabbos, it would not be a problem. Okay. Now the question that arises is, what would the halacha be with regard to Bishul Achar Afia? What about if I had something that was baked? There are different forms of cooking something. You can cook it, which means you put it in water, use a medium of water. You can roast something, which means you put it directly onto a fire, right, a barbecue. You can bake something, which means I bake it in the oven with no medium of moisture at all. So there are different ways, and then we have a subcategory, which is frying, right? So how do you look at frying? On the one hand, frying is like directly on the fire. On the other hand, frying has a medium of oil in it. So what would it be? Deep fry is considered the same as cooking, because a deep fryer is the same as putting noodles in a pot. That's cooking. But a frying pan, that's a question. What exactly is the status of a frying pan? And it's actually a dispute in the two editions of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. He has two different opinions about it himself. He goes back and forth. What is the status of a frying pan? Leaving that aside, let's say I have one of the other methods of cooking. So, for example, I baked something, and now after I baked it, I want to cook it. Would I be in violation of the malacha of Bishul B'Shabbos or not? What do you say? So, what would be a practical example? A practical example would be something that I think would be devastating if it was a problem. Well, croutons. What would the world do on Friday night without croutons? Not the world. I don't think the rest of the world cares. I think it's just our community that consumes this junk. So the question is, what would we do without croutons in the soup on Shabbos? So really what that boils down to is the croutons are baked beforehand, right? And now you're going to take the croutons and put them into your soup. So now I'm doing a different form, a different method of cooking or baking. When we say Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, when we say once something is cooked before Shabbos, it's no longer subject to the malacha of cooking, does that only mean if I'm saying that I'm using the same method of cooking, that will no longer be a problem because I already did that? And this is really not going to enhance the food any more than it already was from the original cooking? Or would you say, no, that's only when I'm doing the same action that was originally done to this. But here in this particular case, I'm not doing the same. I'm changing it entirely. It was first baked, now I'm cooking it. And maybe because I'm changing the form and the method of cooking, meaning it was baked and now it's being cooked, maybe that will now change the status of this food and it's changing the taste of it, and therefore I should say that that would be subject to a malacha of Bishul B'Shabbos. That is the major question. Ironically, where does the Gemara try to prove this point from? I'm sorry, the Gemara does not discuss it. The Gemara does discuss the following case in Maseches Psachim, which is where the Rishonim want to draw a comparison to. The Gemara says, what's the halacha? We all have an obligation to eat matzah on Leil HaSeder. So I bake my matzah. Everybody knows the story about Moshe Goldkorn?
No.
I don't know the story about Moshe Goldkorn. How are you going to Pesach? Well, now you won't. You won't go into Pesach ever again without knowing the story of Moshe Goldkorn. The story of Moshe Goldkorn is written in the Kovna Ghetto Diary, which is a diary that was kept of the stories of the Jews in the Kovna Ghetto. So the story was that Moshe Goldkorn was collecting small kernels of wheat and whatever kind of other kernels he can find for months and months in advance of Pesach, and he sewed up the cuffs on his pants, and he was hiding. Every time he went out to go do work in the fields, he was hiding these small kernels of wheat in his pants, assuming that on Erev Pesach, he was going to crush up all the wheat and make it into matzah. That's what he was planning to do. Comes Erev Pesach, crushes up these kernels, tries to do it privately. He, of course, gets caught by a Nazi official, and they beat him, and they bludgeon him, and they knock out his teeth, and he's bleeding from everywhere, and they smash his matzahs. And the Rav of the Kovna Ghetto writes the following story. The Rav of the Kovna Ghetto writes that he sees out of the corner of his eye that Moshe Goldkorn on Erev Pesach, late in the day, is walking slowly through the ghetto to come to his house to talk to him. And he's nervous. He's nervous because he knows what must have just happened. Everybody knew that Moshe Goldkorn was saving these grains for a long time. And obviously, if the fact that he was coming to his home to ask a question on Erev Pesach, and his mouth was all bloody and his teeth were knocked out, it was clear what he was going to ask him. What was he going to ask? How could God do this to me? Here I am, Mesiras Nefesh, months and months in advance I tried, and this is what the Ribono Shel Olam does to me. So the rabbi was very concerned. He didn't know what to say. And he was dreading that knock on the door. Moshe Goldkorn knocks on the door. And the rabbi says, how can I help you? You don't look well. And he says, I'm okay, I'm fine. But I have a shaila. Here's the shaila. My teeth were just knocked out by the Nazis. My mouth is bleeding. Tonight is Leil HaSeder. And you know that I've been saving up all these kernels for a long time. And I finally had the opportunity to bake the matzah today. But I can't eat it because I don't have teeth. Here's my question. Can I soak the matzah in water and drink it tonight? Or because I come from a Hasidish family and we don't eat gebruchs, maybe I wouldn't be allowed to do that. That's the story of Moshe Goldkorn. And it's questions like that that have kept the Jewish people alive. The answer is irrelevant. It's Jews with that kind of spirit that are the only reason why we're still here. Why is that relevant to our story? The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim. So you have to eat matzah on Leil HaSeder. What is the halacha if I bake the matzah the normal way that I'm supposed to, like Moshe Goldkorn, and then... never sneezed on a microphone before. Sorry. What's the halacha if you bake the matzah and then you go ahead and you cook it after it's baked? Do we assume that it loses its status of matzah? Or would you say, what do you mean? It was baked and it was matzah and therefore that status remains. So what if you throw it into soup afterward? It's still considered to be matzah. That's the Gemara's question. And the Gemara writes that you would not be in fulfillment of your obligation of achilas matzah, of eating matzah on Leil HaSeder. If you had kosher matzah that you then threw into a pot and baked and cooked, that would disqualify, that would discredit the matzah and take away its matzah title. You would not be able to do that on Leil HaSeder. Once it's put into the hot water, it now loses its status. The same is the Gemara's discussion about Karban Pesach. How does one have to eat the Karban Pesach? Mehera Yibana Amigdash. We have to know these halachos. So what am I allowed to do for the Karban Pesach? What am I not allowed to do for the Karban Pesach? How does the Karban Pesach have to be prepared? What? Roasted. Tzli Eish. It has to be Tzli Eish. It's not allowed to be cooked. The Torah says explicitly, you're not allowed to cook the Karban Pesach. So, here I am, and I do what I'm supposed to, and I roast the Karban Pesach, as I should, on a barbecue grill, and now I go ahead and I take it, and I throw it into a pot. Now, why would you do that? You're ruining the barbecue. Nobody would ever take a hamburger or a hot dog from a grill and throw it into a pot. But let's say I do that. I want the meat to be softer, whatever it is. I have a hard time chewing. So I go and I take the Karban Pesach that was put on the grill, as it was supposed to, and now I throw it into a pot of meat, or vice versa. I throw it into a hot pot on the fire, and then I put it onto the grill. Would one disqualify the other or not? And the Gemara has a similar discussion with regard to Karban Pesach as it does to the discussion about matzah on Pesach. The bottom line of the Gemara is that if you take matzah that was baked, that was originally matzah, and now I put it into a hot pot of water, I would now disqualify that matzah for being used from Leil HaSeder. And from there, Rabbi Lezer Mimitz wants to suggest the following idea. Rabbi Lezer Mimitz is also the author of the Sefer Yireim. He lived in the 12th century, one of the great Bali Atosis from Talmidei Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbi Lezer Mimitz was of the opinion that maybe we should say the same should apply here on Shabbos as well. We only say Ein Bishul Achar Bishul on Shabbos. We only say that there's no subsequent Bishul that one would have to worry about on Shabbos if we're talking about a situation where you're doing the same action that was already done. But if now you're going to do something new, which means you're going to take that crouton that was baked originally and now you're going to cook it by putting it into the hot soup, that would be a problem because you are now changing the status of this item. And therefore we should assume, yesh bishul achar afia b'Shabbos. Even though ain't bishul achar bishul, yesh bishul achar afia. Because that is considered a different method, and the texture is going to change, as we find by the matzah, in the opposite direction. It would disqualify the matzah, which means it would be considered bishul on Shabbos, even though it was already bit. That's the discussion that Rabbi Lezer Mimitz has. The Rav Yah disagrees, and the Rav Yah says that he's not of the opinion of Rabbi Lezer Mimitz. I think the Rav Yah, if I'm not mistaken, was a Talmud of Rabbi Lezer Mimitz, so he's disagreeing on his Rebbe. And he said, no, that story of the matzah is totally different. There, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, you have to read the end of the sentence. Why do we say that the matzah becomes disqualified once you cook it in a pot of water? Not because it's considered to now change the status, but rather, ba'inan tam matzah v'leka. Part of the mitzvah of matzah is we have to taste the matzah. If you're going to cook it in water, you're no longer going to taste it anymore. And therefore, that's why that's the anomaly. That's the exception to the rule. But you cannot extrapolate from that. You cannot extract from that to any other halacha with regard to Bishul B'Shabbos. One has nothing to do with the other. And that is the major machlokas harishonim with regard to Yesh Bishul Achar Afia. As I mentioned, it's extremely relevant. There are people who like to take challah and throw it into their soup. Or there are people who like to take croutons and put it into the soup. Or some people like to take crackers and dip it into a hot tea or a hot coffee. Or you take a cookie and you put it in. Is that allowed on Shabbos or perhaps not? That is the major, major shaila that really hinges on this issue, whether we assume yesh bishul achar afia or not. Let us just get to the halacha. How do we paskin, unless you have a question before then?
Oh, I'm just curious if the yellow croutons are baked or
Perfect. We'll get there. Let me just get to the halacha first. So this is going to differ between Sfardim and Ashkenazim, because the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah here have a dispute how to paskin. The Mechaber actually quotes, the Shulchan Aruch quotes both opinions. So it confuses us. He quotes both opinions. He first says that there is a problem with Bishul Achar Afia, then he writes, there's no problem with Bishul Achar Afia. The question is, what exactly does he mean? How does he paskin? He doesn't tell us. He just quotes both opinions. So Rav Ovadia Yosef has an interesting tshuva where he says that since there's no real significant change that happens once I take something that was baked already, there would be no problem of Bishul Achar Afia. And that is, in his opinion, what he thinks is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. And that's why the Sfardim are generally makel, that we say, Ein Bishul Achar Afia, nothing significant enough is happening, is changing, now that I'm going to take something baked and go and put it in through the Bishul process. And that is why he believes that it would not be a problem. The Ramah is of the opinion that Yesh Bishul Achar Afia. And therefore he says, I'm going to read you his Lashon, V'nagu lizar lechatchila, and we have the custom lechatchila, shelo litein pas afilu b'klisheni kol zman shayat soledes. So if I have soup that is in a klisheni, which means it was on the pot, that's kli rishon, the pot was on the fire. Now I took it off, I put it into a bowl, that's a klisheni, it's twice removed from the pot. If it's still boiling hot, which soup usually is when it's still in a bowl, the Ramah says one should not throw bread into it because we believe, Ashkenazim are of the opinion, that yesh bishul achar afia. Now, once the soup cools down, of course you're allowed to do it. There's no question then. The only question is, when the soup is burning hot, would I be allowed to throw bread into it or perhaps not? What about the croutons? So what do we do about the croutons? What are we going to do if we say yesh bishul achar afia? So the Sfardim are safe because they paskin ein bishul achar afia, no problem. But the Ashkenazim here, what are we going to do? The answer is, like Racheli said, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa saves the day. He says you have to look, how are they processed? How are they prepared? Says the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, if you look into it, the yellow croutons, he says, which is not the same, it's funny that I'm saying that. Downstairs, I just saw for lunch, they have, I did notice, they serve the same thing every single day. Is that what it is? Am I imagining? Or it's just when I'm here on Tuesday and Thursday?
Every Thursday, Saturday.
Oh, I was just surprised. Literally,
there's
same menu every day.
To it.
Then I saw that there's a sign downstairs. If you have a comment about the food, please let us know. Anyone ever comment that?
Of course.
And?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've commented other things. Not that's the schedule. Because for me, I'm here every day. So things are happening every week.
Okay. Anyway, interesting. Sorry. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Right. So why did I get into the what do I care what's going on downstairs? Of course, I care very much. But what I noticed today was, that when they have the salad bar, they don't just have salad, but they also have other additives that you can put in. One of those is the other kinds of croutons. What are the other kinds called? These are called soup mandels, right? The yellow ones. And what are the other ones called? Caesar croutons, you know, you put in the Caesar salad.
The bread ones.
Yeah. Oh, so the bread ones are different.
Yeah.
The bread ones are a real problem of Yesh Bishel Acharafia. That's exactly what the Ramah says. What does the Ramah say? He says you shouldn't take bread and throw it into the soup on Shabbos because Yesh Bishel Acharafia, that's the exact example that he gives. What about the yellow soup mandels? That says the Shmir Shamska Hasar are not a problem. Why? Because the way that those are prepared are they are deep fried in oil. Once they're deep fried in oil, that means they were mevushel, means they were cooked. Deep frying is the same as cooking. And therefore, says the Shmir Shabbos Kechasa, since those were cooked, we go back to the original rule, which is, Ein bishel achar bishel b'shabbos. So we're lucky, the Shmir Shabbos Kechasa saves us, that we're able to continue on with our custom of having our, of having our croutons. However, Mishnah Berurah does say, maybe there's room to save even the other croutons. Even the bread croutons, maybe we can take care of that. How? The Ramah just said, you're not allowed to put bread into the soup. So what possible heter can there be? Yeah?
Maybe you can count the ladle.
Oh, says the Mishnah Berurah, you have to look carefully. What are the steps of getting burning hot soup from the pot into your bowl? Says the Mishnah Berurah, it's in the burning hot pot, that's Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon, we assume, is Bishul B'Shabbos. If I would throw croutons into the pot, which nobody would do, but if I would throw croutons into the original pot, that would certainly be bishul. If I put it into a klisheni, we say kali abishul. We always have to worry. Maybe something will get cooked, even in a klisheni. Oh, it says the Mishnah Berurah, this is not a klisheni. Why? Because how did you get it from the pot into the bowl? You don't pour from the pot directly into the bowl. You take a ladle, and the ladle is then used to put the content of the soup into the bowl. And therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, maybe I can argue that this is already a kli shlishi by the time it gets into the bowl. You got it, Brianna? Three times removed. I have the pot, then I have the ladle, then I have the bowl.
Yeah.
And therefore, by the time it's in the bowl, it's already cooled off so much because the ladle has already cooled it off 1 degree from the pot. Now, once you take it from the ladle and you transfer it into the third utensil, that would now mean that it's cooling off more and more and more, and therefore there would be no problem of bishul deklishi shlishi. Therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, maybe that is a great way to get around the problem. Since all of us usually use a ladle to dish out the soup from the pot into the bowl, therefore there would not be an issue. The problem is, Shulchan Aruch writes two different things in two different places, whether a ladle is actually able to lower something from being a klisheni to now become a klishlishi. Is that true that a ladle itself is strong enough to then cool off the content of the soup as you're putting it into the bowl?
So if you could transfer in like a second,
so the Shulchan Aruch writes two different things. And the way that they explain what the Shulchan Aruch says is that in one place the Shulchan Aruch means some people keep the ladle inside of the pot. You ever do that? Keep the ladle inside of the pot. Therefore, it's like an extension of the pot. It's burning hot, like you just said. And nothing is going to lower its heat level at all by being in that ladle. However, if you take a ladle out of the drawer, and from the drawer or the counter, you then use it in the pot, then the Mishnah Berurah is correct, that would now make the soup bowl into a kli shlishi, which would then circumvent the problem of having bishul acharafia by using the croutons. Okay? Okay. Let's go back to tea leaves for a second, because that's relevant to this point, and then I'll take your questions. When we talk about tea leaves, you have to ask yourself, well, is that bishul acharafia? How are tea leaves prepared? So tea leaves are generally torched in a factory, and they try to remove, by using a torch on the tea leaves, they try to remove any moisture that is inside of the tea leaves, and that would be considered sli or afia. That would be considered like a barbecue, right? Or afia, like baking. So the question then becomes, would there be a problem of bishul achar afia? By then taking the tea leaves that were already baked, are you allowed to then take hot water and pour them on top of something that was already baked? That is the question. Ashkenazim, we have a problem because the Ramah paskins, yesh bishul achar afia. Svardim are very safe, and you have no problem to do this at all. What about instant coffee? What about instant coffee?
I think they also do some sort of roasting to the coffee.
So you have to look into it. The problem is the reason why we have a little bit more of an issue by instant coffee is because the Shmir Shabbos Chasa points out that there are many coffee flavors where they have vanilla flavors, hazelnut, other things that are not roasted. They throw them into the mixture, but those are not roasted. So you really have to know the makeup of each one of the coffees in order to know whether or not you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. Anyway, yes, questions? Question, yeah.
Is there ever a discussion of if it's twice removed, bishul acharafia, acharafia? Let's say with those croutons that the challah was probably already baked and then it was cut up and baked again.
Again, what happened? You baked the challah. Now you made it into a crouton by baking it again, yeah. Correct?
But does that change the problem of bishul?
I don't think so. Why should it? The point is, the reason why those Rishonim say that there's Bishul Acharafia, which is the way the Ramaz Machmir, is because it changes the texture, it changes the status, everything is different from the way it was before. That being the case, if you put a bread crouton inside of the soup, it is going to change the status of it. Yeah?
What if you have Bishul and then Afia, then could you do Bishul again?
Mm-hmm. How did you do the Afia?
Let's say... that sometimes people could make bisli out of taking noodles and then baking the noodles. So you cook it and then you bake it.
By the way, I just want you all to know that I'm not crazy. There is a woman who listened to our Bishul Shir from last week, called me and said, yes, my daughters eat the raw pasta.
No way.
And all of their friends do also, and it drives me crazy, she said, and I thank you for pointing it out. So I'm not as nuts as you all made me feel last week. Yes, okay. I didn't make it up. I couldn't have made it up. I don't know how to make up such a thing. Yes.
Anyway, if you take pasta...
And if that woman's listening this time, I thank you for calling me. Yeah.
If you take pasta and then you bake it. So you cook it and then you bake it, then could you put it in your soup?
So I think that would potentially be a problem because we assume when you cooked it and then when you baked it, the baking undid the cooking. Right?
Okay.
Then to go back again and cook it, I think would be something new.
Rice in the microwave, but with water, that's considered cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a question in general, how do we view a microwave? So Rav Moshe talks about it in a tshuva. It has relevance to Bishul Akum as well. Would there be any problem for a non-Jew to cook for me in a microwave? So that's a big discussion. So I believe Rav Moshe writes, since a microwave is such an abnormal way to cook things, therefore that might have a different status on Shabbos. That might be different for Bishul Akum and for Shabbos, but that was maybe in the days of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Today, it's not considered abnormal at all to cook in a microwave. It's something that we do all the time. And obviously our appliances have very, very different usages than in the days of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and that's why we have to re-evaluate the question. But it seems clear to me that cooking in a microwave is considered cooking l'chol davar. It's the same as using an oven. It shouldn't be any different at all. Yeah?
In terms of the ladle that we eat in the soup, for the extension of the soup pot, how long would it have? Because I guess, let's say you're serving different bowls of soup. So you take it out of the drawer, then you put it in the pot. To what extent does it become?
It's hard to give a...
should you leave it out in between serving bowls? And not leaving it, I don't know. When you're getting the other bowl, what does that constitute as being the same entity of the...
If it's going to conduct heat, that it can,
So you would say in between bowls...
First of all, I think there's a difference if it's metal or plastic. Yeah. Right? Metal is going to become much hotter, much quicker. I don't know, it's hard to know exactly what that cutoff is. Okay, which leads me to a very interesting question. The Shulchan Aruch does talk about the prohibition of Hagasa. Anybody ever heard of Hagasa? What does Hagasa mean? Stirring a pot on Shabbos. Now, this is a very relevant issue. It actually just came up this past Shabbos. Somebody was completely unaware of the fact that there was any issue that they had to be concerned about at all, and it's just worth mentioning. So the Gemara says in Maseches Beitza the following case. Says the Gemara in Beitza Daf Lamed Daled. Let's say you have a number of people who collaborate in the act of cooking. Echad maybe asa'ur, one brings the fire. Ve'echad maybe asa'itzim, and one brings the wood. Ve'echad sofes asa'kedera, and one comes and puts down the pot. Ve'echad maybe mayim, and one then fills the pot up with water. Ve'echad nosem besochot tavlin, and one of them then throws spices into the pot with water. And then the last one comes, and he is magus. The last one comes and stirs up the pot. Now, you'll say, what am I doing? All I'm doing is stirring. Everybody who came before me did everything wrong. Says the Gemara, Kulan Chayavin. Everyone has violated Bishul in that case. The one who brings the fire, the one who brings the wood, the one who brings the pot, the one who brings the water, the one who brings the spices, and, for our purposes, the one who brings the ladle and starts stirring the pot. Okay? So that's what the Gemara says. What we learn from there is that Hagasa, that stirring a pot, is considered to be an act of cooking. Why? Why is it an act of cooking? Because it enhances the process of cooking. That's why we stir the pot, because we want to make sure that our food is cooking well. So that is why we assume that Hagasa would be a problem. Now, the Rishonim have a discussion. Do we say that the only prohibition of Hagasa that is discussed here in the Gemara is only when it's Agabe Ha'esh? It's only while the pot is still cooking on the fire. Or it's even once I take it off of the fire, it would still be a problem. Why? Because we assume that it's still a Kli Rishon once I take something off the fire, because it's still burning hot. So would there be a problem? Would there be a prohibition there as well? Or would it only be limited to a pot that is still on the fire? That's when I say there's a problem of Hagasa. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos writes that if I have a pot where you're doing the act of Bishul Samimanim, which means I am cooking up spices, I'm cooking up dye, and I'm doing that for the purpose of dyeing some cotton or some kind of material. So then in such a case, if somebody comes along and stirs up the pot while it's dyeing the cotton, that would be a problem. That would be Bishul B'Shabbos. Right? So you have this pot that's going way before Shabbos. Everything was set up. And now somebody comes along on Shabbos itself and starts stirring up the pot. The Gemara says that would be a prohibition. So don't you see from there, that that would seem to be a problem of Hagasa, even if it's no longer on the fire. Tosis disagrees, and he says, no, you can't bring any proof from that. That has nothing to do with Bishul. When the Gemara says you're chayiv, it doesn't mean you're chayiv because you violated Bishul, but rather, which malacha did you violate? Soveya. Soveya means you're not allowed to color or dye something on Shabbos. So here, by stirring up the pot on Shabbos from the dye that's put together with the cotton, the problem is not the fact that I'm now enhancing the process of cooking, but rather I'm enhancing the malacha of Tzoveya on Shabbos. And that's really where we have a concern. So that's the major discussion in the Rishonim with regard to Hagasa on Shabbos. The Rishonim also have a discussion. If you look in the Beis Yosef, they talk about the different opinions in the Rishonim. Do we say that Hagasa applies even bitavshil shenishbashel kotzarcho? If I have a food item that has been cooked to its full capacity, I have a chalent. The chalent is on the crock pot. So is there any problem to go on Shabbos and stir the chalent? It's already fully cooked. Why should there be a problem of Hagasa if it's fully cooked? Now, the Sharatzion, which is the Mishnah Berurah's comments on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, Sharatzion writes, I don't even understand what the discussion is. When it comes to Bishul itself, right? If I take something, I put it on the fire on Shabbos, but it was Mavushal called Tzarcha before Shabbos started, am I in violation of Bishul? Not a true question. I'm not in violation of Bishul. Why? Because the assumption is that it was already cooked to its full capacity before Shabbos, and therefore I'm not adding anything now. Even if I take a pot out of the refrigerator and put it onto the oven on Shabbos, I'm not in violation of Bishul, Mida Araisa, because we would say that the act of cooking was already done. Ask the Sharatian, I don't understand. If that's the case, how could it be that if I go, I'm going to read you his words, Velo Eda Hatam, I cannot understand. How could it be if I take a pot directly out of the refrigerator on Shabbos and put it onto the fire, I would not be in violation of Bishul so long as the contents of that pot were already cooked before Shabbos to their full capacity? So then how is it possible that if I have a chalent that's on the fire itself, and I go ahead and I take a spoon and I start stirring it, how can I be in violation of Bishul? How can that be worse? That's an amazing question that is asked by the Mishnah Berurah, the Sharatzion. And the answer that Rav Moshe Feinstein gives is, I'll tell you why, there's a major difference. What's the difference? For those of you who understand cooking well, what's the difference?
And when something's still cooking, it could get better. If it's mixed over, if it's done cooking and you put it back, it's going to get hot.
Correct. Why? So Rav Moshe says what you're saying. He just qualifies it a little bit. Rav Moshe says the answer is, if something is cooked to its full capacity, and then I take it out of a refrigerator and put it back on the oven, nothing's going to happen. It will get hot. And that's not called Bishul. However, says Rav Moshe, sometimes you have a pot, and there are different pockets inside of that pot where it didn't cook so well. By stirring it, you're now taking all those little pieces that didn't cook well, and you're giving them an opportunity to cook. That's bishul. That's bishul. Says Rav Moshe, that's why haggasah, stirring a pot, would be worse than taking a fully cooked food out of the refrigerator and putting it on the oven on Shabbos, even though it sounds so paradoxical, it sounds backwards, but it makes a lot of sense. If you know anything about cooking, of course it makes sense. Says Rav Moshe, even though in every pot I can potentially have one bean somewhere that's not cooked well, but by putting it back on the fire and not stirring it, the same thing is going to happen that happened before. However, says Rav Moshe, when I go ahead and I stir it, that is why we assume that there should be a problem. There should be a problem. Now, what about taking something? I'm not stirring a pot, but let's say I want some challant on Friday night. And I know that I'm not supposed to stir the pot because maybe it's going to get the beans from the other end and it's going to cook them, even though they weren't cooked before. That's why I'm not going to stir it. Would I be allowed to stick in a ladle into the challant pot and take out and remove challant from the pot to have for myself? What would you say? Yeah.
Well, with removing food from the pot while still on there, then have the heat, like, and the heat could cook the other parts of it better, so there's less food in there.
So what's fascinating about this is, it's a three-way machlokas arishon. How can you have three opinions? Either it's cooking or it's not. So the Ravid gets very upset at the Rambam, and he says, Hifriz al Hamida. Hifriz al Hamida means you're going to the extreme. Why would this be called cooking? What's the problem? You're not doing anything. All I did is I stuck a spoon into the crock pot and I took out some shelling. What's the problem? So the Ravid holds this is entirely mutter, no problem at all. On the other extreme, the Beis Yosef quotes the Ran, who's of the opinion that this is an Isser Bishol Mida Araisa, because it's the same as Hagasa. There would be no difference between this and stirring a pot. The same way when you stir a pot, you're giving more opportunity for other pockets of this mixture to cook. So too, when I'm going to take out some of the mixture, it's also going to give opportunity for some of it to cook. And the Rambam gives the middle approach, which is, it's not an Isser Mida Araisa of Bishol, but it certainly is an Isser Mida Rabbanan of Bishol. So those are the three opinions in the Rishonim. How do we pass in the Halacha? Shulchan Aruch writes as follows, that Hagasha, that doing Hagasa, when something is Einam Mevushal, stirring a pot when the pot is not completely cooked, would be a biblical prohibition of Bishol B'Shabbos. That would be an Isur D'Araisa of Bishol. Mishneh Berurah writes that we are Machmir. Even if it's Mevushal called Sarcha, you shouldn't be allowed to do it. That's what the Mishneh Berurah suggests. And Rav Moshe writes that he was very careful not even to take out food from the crock pot while it's on the fire. The same reason, because he was concerned that by doing so, you might be in violation, according to some Rishonim, of Bishul B'Shabbos, because in doing so, you're going to move around something that's in there, or you're going to, as you said, maybe displace the heat differently, and other things are going to be able to cook. And therefore, he said, that would be a problem. Rav Moshe then writes in the Tshuva, what about if I have a cup of hot water? Is there a problem to stir the hot water?
No.
Of course not. Why? Nothing happens. Nothing's happening. So Rav Moshe says, if I have a pot of hot water, there's nothing at all to be concerned about. The only discussion here is when I have a mixture of something, when I have a stew, when I have a challant, when I have something that is cooking up on the fire, that is where the whole discussion is. However, what we learn from this issue of Hagasa is that anything that will be memaher bishulo, anything that will enhance the cooking process and speed it up, would be considered potentially Bishul B'Shabbos. And as a result of that, we assume that you're not allowed to take a pot that was uncovered on Shabbos and put the cover back on it. Why not? Because obviously, that's going to help contain the heat and cook it better. And therefore, we assume that anything that you're going to do to enhance the cooking process would not be allowed to be done on Shabbos. And that is why you're not allowed to do that. So just this past Shabbos, I was asked the following question. There was a woman who had a lot of guests over for Shabbos. And it was a very last minute situation that she ended up with all these guests. And the question that she was faced with was, she had a caterer who sent her all the food for Shabbos, and the caterer also sent a warming drawer. So the question then became, is she able to take the food out of the warming drawer on Shabbos? Not a warming drawer. What's it called?
Into a bag.
A hot box. Yes, thank you. So a hot box, right on wheels. and it has a whole bunch of shelves. So the question was, am I allowed to take the food out of that on Shabbos? What do you say? Why not? No reason not to. Shouldn't be a problem. However, here's the problem. The top four shelves of the hot box were for Friday night. The bottom four shelves of the hot box were for Shabbos day. The question now becomes, what do I do? If I have to take out Friday night, and then I'm going to close the door again, that's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says. You're being memar bishulo. If I would leave the door open for the rest of Shabbos, it obviously wouldn't contain the heat as much as it will if I close the door. That's being memar bishulo.
But if it's always on.
What?
The thing is always on, so.
Correct.
It's not really affecting the warmth.
So it is. Let's say I have a pot that is on the fire, and I took off the cover of the pot. Shulchan Aruch says, even though it's still on the fire, and nothing really changed other than the fact that I took off the lid, I'm not allowed to return the lid to the pot. Why? Because that's going to be memaher bishulo. That is going to enhance the cooking process from what was to now what is going to be now that the lid is back on. That would be the same, I think, as this case that you're describing, right? I would assume that by closing the door, you're being memaher bishulo as well. So that's a problem that some people are not always aware of when it comes to using one of those hot boxes on Shabbos. If you have different items that are in there that you're using for different parts of the meal or different parts of Shabbos, you have to be concerned that by reclosing the door, you might be running into a major, major problem. Yeah.
Two questions.
Yeah.
So we said if we take it out while it's on fire, then it's going to cook differently, and like that's violation. But what if it's done off fire? It's still differently like arranged and pumped.
Again, that what? Correct.
It's going to be enhanced. But what if it's done off the fire? It's still going to change the way that, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's going to change maybe, like, how it is in the pot.
Sure, that's why we assume that off of the fire is still a problem, Shulchan Aruch says.
Off of the fire,
yeah.
Okay, and one more question.
Yeah.
So, we said that if it's, like, half of the way or a third of the way cooked, then that it technically can't be enhanced anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, why would stirring be a problem if it's halfway or even a third of the way cooked?
So that's the question that the Mishnah Berura asks, and Rav Moshe Feinstein gives the answer that he suggests the reason why is because when we talk about that issue, that's only when I have a pot. By putting it back on the fire, you're not really enhancing it so much. But here, when I have, let's say, a chelim, there could be beans or pockets of this mixture that are on different parts of the pot that are not cooked at all. And by mixing it up, you're now cooking entirely something that was not cooked at all. Even though most of the mixture was, there are going to be pockets, and by stirring it, that's what you're intending to do. So that's why it's a problem.
What if you assume that, wouldn't you assume that everything in that pot is at least a third of the way or halfway cooked?
Not always the case, right? It's not always the case. Okay, so I think before we get into a new issue, which maybe we'll pick up on Thursday, there's a lot more to talk about. Everything we've been speaking about until now are issues that are mid-oraisa, are issues that are on a biblical level of what's called bishul. What we need to talk about in the next year is, what are the issues mid-rabbanan? Chazal came along, the rabbis came along and said, we have concerns on Shabbos. We're afraid that something's going to go wrong, things are going to happen, and people are going to make mistakes and violate bishul if we're not going to make all of these safeguards. So that's what we need to talk about next time. How does one properly heat up food on Shabbos? How does one leave food warming before Shabbos begins? These are all on a rabbinic level, because as far as the Torah is concerned, as far as Bishul is concerned, when we talk about a malacha, that we already just discussed, what the parameters are, what perhaps they aren't. And everything we're going to talk about going forward, which I hope we'll try to condense into one shiur, obviously this is really a very shortened version of all of Hilchos Bishul, but I think it's the most important parts that all of us need to know very practically in the kitchen. So maybe we'll pick up with that next time.